Greetings and welcome to another episode of The Conscious Observer. This is going to be a movie review. I just got out of the theater watching Creed 3. I had an excellent time with it. I had a beautiful time with Creed 3. And Michael B. Jordan and our brother Jonathan Majors. It was a phenomenal movie. Now I have some gripes that I got with it, you know, not really gripes, that's too strong of a word, really, you know, and you know, I want to speak on the nature of what some people may consider pettiness. You know, maybe it comes up in the mind that for me to, you know, draw attention towards imperfection in certain things, you know, imperfection in entertainment, imperfection in the quality of entertainment that we watch. Some people say that to draw negative attention or to point out negative attributes is petty, but it's not petty to point out negative aspects of a thing. It is only a desire to see something perfect, or to see something that is worthy of a person's attention. This movie was really brilliant. It was very, very good. As a film, you know, as a something to sit down and watch and, you know, have it kind of, you know, take you to another place. It was very good for that. You know, it's one of the B-rated movies. It's a very good B movie. You know, it follows a certain formula. And, you know, as I was watching it, I was saying to myself, what would make this movie better? And it's really not a problem with Creed itself. It's the era in which movies are in right now. Movies today are not like how movies were in the 90s and beyond the 90s, back into the 80s and 70s. Really, the golden era of movies, I would say, the perfect era of movies probably happened in the 70s. You know, you got movies like Jaws, you know, and a lot of people, they sleep on Jaws, but Jaws was a cinematic masterpiece. You know, you got movies like The Godfather, Part 1 and 2, which are considerably two of the best movies that were ever made. And what makes those movies so great is not so much the focus on the main characters as much as it is a focus on the details that make up a character, which have almost nothing to do with the character themselves. The characters are basically these, you know, objects that move in environments. And you know, when you watch those movies in the 70s, especially Westerns that were shot on the widescreen, the director wanted to capture not just a close-up of the main actor. A lot of the times when directors shot movies back in that time, the main actor wasn't in the center of the shot. He was maybe off to the side sometimes with, you know, the camera capturing the surrounding people that he's interacting with, extras, or not extras, they're supporting actors. But then the extras are, you know, fantastic actors as well. If you watch old movies, especially Westerns, I was watching, what is this cracker doing? What are you doing? Okay. I'm always leery of white people getting out their cars in traffic because I'm always ready for that scene and heat where they get out the car and just start airing people out. So, you gotta stay on your P's and Q's out here. But to get back to the point, movies used to be a lot different in their presentation. The supporting cast were stars too. Like, if you watch an old Western, and I know that there's a sense of, you know, there's a barrier between modern people and old movies. Modern day people don't want to watch a black and white movie. You absolutely should, because you're really not going to understand how superb filmmaking and cinema can be unless you watch old movies, because in old movies, you're looking at a bygone culture. You're looking at something that will never happen again. Well, it will happen again in the future, but right now we live in such a flimsy, fake, technology ran world that it robs us of our character. Like, you really don't have a lot of characters anymore. Like, when people were growing up, everybody was a character. They would say, oh, you're such a character. Everybody was a character because people had the freedom to feel like they could be entitled to their own opinion. Whereas today, everyone is pretty much generic due to these restrictions on language, the restrictions on, you know, what you can say and what you can't say. So there's a, you know, a very fake feel to the world today. It's not like how it used to be. You know, the way your grandfather used to act, the people don't act like that anymore. People that are dead and gone, God rest their souls, their personalities are gone too. And movies back in that day captured the essence of, it was so easy to see the essence of human beings when you watched movies with people who were characters. When you watched movie with people who were authentic actors, but not really acting per se, just having a very thorough understanding of, you know, how to perform. Which, you know, made great film. So nowadays you have these B movies, and what you notice is that the shots are always up close on the main actor. It's almost like the movie is kind of, I would say, like myopic, or if you don't know what that word means, myopic means narrow, like being narrow-minded. It's like the movie is not, you know, showing as much detail to information and not as interested in information as it possibly could be. It's kind of sad, you know. Just because the movie is about Michael B. Jordan doesn't mean that the camera has to be, you know, all in his face all the time, like all up in his face, like 2 inches from his face. You know, because when you do that, you destroy the surrounding potential for, you know, engagement with the environment. So the movie just becomes this, you know, one directional movie where you know the ending, the predictability of the movie. Back when you used to watch movies, it had such a unpredictable element to it because the characters were interacting with so many other elements. You'd have to watch older movies to understand what I'm saying. Getting out of that long filmmaking class or lecture, it was a good movie. It was interesting because some of my, you know, slight, you know, dislikes of the movie was kind of towards brother Jonathan Majors, because Jonathan Majors as well as Michael B. Jordan. Both of them, but Michael B. Jordan has a better time. And let me explain what I'm saying. Michael B. Jordan can showcase being a so quote unquote badass better. Nah, that's not right either. That's not necessarily true. Because Michael B. Jordan, you know, I didn't really buy him as a badass or a villain in Black Panther. I didn't buy that. You know, he can sell himself as a tough guy, you know, but not a tough guy that's a bad guy. A tough guy that's like a good guy. Jonathan Majors, on the other hand, is, you know, not as convincing in that role. And maybe it's because the role of Damian in the movie is not someone who is totally bad, right? But that's how they, well, see, this is my conundrum with it, because the movie was well done. The movie was well done, but it seems as though, and this is really where I'm getting to the underlying aspect of the film, where they're not lending enough to Jonathan Majors' character. They're not lending enough. First off, he is not the same person that he was. The person that they had playing the younger actor. Damn, it's cold as fucking here. I'm in my car with the damn temperature all the way down. The actor that they had him as a younger version of himself, that actor or that young brother was way more thorough or street oriented, so to speak. The personality of the brother from the street, the personality of the brother groomed in the hood. That is a very distinct personality. I cannot copy that personality. There are certain schematics and processes to putting yourself into that type of mind frame where it comes off authentic and natural. And Jonathan Majors, you know, being a brother, basically, you know, quite a lot like myself, you know, a brother who was not raised in the hood, very academic, or not academic. I wasn't very academic, but I was very interested in literature and stuff like that. You know, someone who's, you know, well versed in literature and, you know, likes to read as opposed to liking to, you know, be aggressive or do things like that. like may be the wrong word, because the brothers, that's just a natural, it's a circumstance, a natural circumstance for them. They don't like to be that way. They are that way because that's how they came up. And I'm the way that I am because of how I came up as well. And Jonathan Majors is a brother like that too. So for me, it was a hard sell on, there were aspects where his gangsterisms didn't fully come across as, you know, genuine. Like, it was hard for him. You could see there was a, you know, those types of brothers command a certain type of respect. They command it. It is a natural command. Brothers like me command a certain type of respect as well, but it's only when we're acting like how we really are. Those brothers, they, you know, speak, and, you know, there's a certain vibration with their speech that Jonathan Majors did not have. He just didn't have it. But at the same, so I would say that he was miscasted and also perfect for the role. It's kind of weird, because he did such a great job. I would say that he was miscasted and perfect. It's weird, but yeah, that's what it was. So I liked the movie. The only thing I didn't like about the movie, as I was watching it, you know, my mind tends to try to look beyond the surface, and, you know, I I understand the pattern of Hollywood, and what I saw in the movie was a attempt from my perspective, and this could be just my opinion. I don't think it is. I believe that I'm looking at it correctly. I believe that I'm looking at it correctly, and I know that a lot of people won't agree with me, but people who are dedicated to seeing the truth will agree with me. The movie kind of is a light-skinned supremacist movie. You know, oftentimes you may hear me say that light-skinned people are like the substitute teachers for white supremacy. That light-skinned people are like, that's the way Hollywood portrays them. Hollywood is getting to a point where it is using light-skinned black people as substitutes for white people. Where a light-skinned person, they will put them into a role that really was designed for like a white person. They do it a lot. Like, especially with Tessa Thompson, who in this movie was annoying as hell to me. I mean, Tessa Thompson to me was just annoying as hell. She was okay some parts, but for the most part, she was very annoying because she has that thing. She has this thing about her where, as a part of the movie, as a part of this movie, as a part of this agenda, they have to show the black woman being the teacher of the black man. The black man has to consult the black woman for like emotional advice. Like Adonis has to go to Tessa Thompson basically to, you know, tell me if I'm doing this right. I'm feeling doubtful of myself. The brother is feeling doubtful of himself every movie. And just to get back into a swing of, nah, you know, I'm not doubting myself. I'm gonna be strong. Nah, brother, just understand, to retain the principle. Apollo, or Adonis, whatever, retain the principle. But that's a part of the bad writing. That's why it's a B movie, because a good movie, a great movie, is all about character and realism. But when you have these agendas in a movie, it is always going to rob from the integrity of the movie, because it's going to make the people two-dimensional instead of being as three-dimensional as they can be. This brother has been through so much in these two, three movies that at this age and at this stage in his life, he should be able to deal with things in a way that he didn't before. Right? Because that would be building his character. That would be showing growth in his character. And if he has a resilience to growth, then that should be open. That should be also a part of his story. Like, the brother is like, you know, very stubborn to growth. He's stubborn to the process of growing. That should be mentioned if it was an A-list movie, because this movie truthfully had the potential to be an A-list movie. It's not, though, because it is insisting on agenda, on a couple of very subtle agendas. Now, I think it was Michael B. Jordan who was smart enough to say, hey, let's play the agendas. I got to have agendas in the movie. Okay, cool. Let's play them down as low as possible so that it doesn't ruin the movie completely. We don't want to ruin this movie. But that's probably another reason why they, you know, keep the camera so focused on just the main actors. Because if, for instance, they, you know, made the movie more engaging with supporting characters, then that might be an opportunity for one of the producers to say, hey, this is a perfect opportunity to put in a lesbian kiss scene, or this is a perfect opportunity to have a gay guy come up to. So they just kept the movie real tight. We gonna focus on Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors, and that's it. Certain things are gonna happen. The mother's going to die. Felicia Rashad's going to die. And I'm going to talk about her as well. And she plays a part into the light-skinned supremacist thing too, even though Felicia Rashad isn't a light-skinned woman. But in this movie, you know, she's playing the part of a kind of like a mammy, because she is overprotective of Adonis when it comes to Damien. And this is where I'm saying the light-skinned supremacy is coming in. The substitute teacher for white supremacy. Damien is a dark-skinned character, which means that he represents black people that are darker in general. His mother, Felicia Rashad's character, is trying to shelter Adonis from the influence of this dark-skinned man, because from her perspective, he's a monster and you should distance yourself from him. Those type of messages to me are like red flags of the programming, because it speaks to a larger scale of light-skinned people and black people who are already imbued with white supremacy. Every black person is imbued with white supremacy. Every black person has a white person inside of them. And when they watch movies like this, the white person inside of them is activated. Because then they look at the dark-skinned person and then they say, yeah, he is the villain. He's the dark-skinned black man. You should distance yourself from him because he's bad. No, you don't distance yourself from the dark-skinned brother. I did not see enough of an attempt to truly understand that character's position and his mind and his mind frame. It was every character was writing them off. From Wood Harris's character was writing them off. Look, man, this nigga made up his life. He made his decisions. You need to let him go and forget the past. That's not really the right. That's not correct. That forgetting and, hey, man, you know, a nigga like that, you know, that all that type of stuff, that's just white supremacy. Hey, man, distance yourself from those people, because that's always been a strategy of separating success for an individual black person being the means by which they have to divide themselves from the rest of black people. I can't identify with low income black people because I'm successful. I can't help and contribute to the causes of poor black people because white people made me successful. So yo, just focus on what you doing, man. Stay in the present, you know, keep your head on straight and forget all these niggas from your past. Nah, man, that wasn't appropriate. So at the end of the movie, there was a perfect opportunity for a scene to happen that didn't take place. And I knew it wasn't. I was challenging the movie in my head. I was like, I wonder if you're going to do it. And you're going to do it when Michael B. Jordan walks. He wins the fight, obviously. It would have been very good if he lost the fight. Why? Because he doesn't have to win. Just because he's the hero, it's already been established that he's the hero. But again, this is not, a movie that's shooting for Oscars. So they're going to follow the formula. The hero wins. But they could have wrote the movie where he lost. And he still is considered the hero. Just because you are the hero doesn't mean you have to win the fight. You can still be the hero and lose the fight, because then that would show, you know, some character growth. You know, you lost the fight. You put your effort in. But really, it's nothing to have your brother win. There was such a concerted effort for Damien not to win, where Michael B. Jordan's character was even kind of one-sided, where he was more so supporting the Mexican character to beat Damien than he was supporting Damien. It should have showed Michael B. Jordan in a role of being, you know, balanced in his support, because he was the fight promoter. He was the one who was setting up, saying, hey, this is my man Damien, and this is my fighter, the Mexican dude. He should have been showing, you know, evenness in his support, but he was just showing support to the brown skin dude. Then they got Damien, you know, throwing illegal punches and all this type of stuff in the third, just to show that he's the villain. okay, I can get with that because he's from a, he was in prison. So that makes sense that he would do stuff like that, right? Okay, whatever. The point that I'm trying to make, what's the point? Take me back to the point. They could have had Damian win the move, win the fight, because what does Michael B. Jordan lose if Damian wins? Nothing. He's still rich. He wasn't going to continue to be a fighter anyway. He only came out of retirement to challenge Damian. If Damian won, it doesn't do anything to him. He's still going to be rich. He's still going to be a boxing promoter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't do nothing for that. And plus, like I told my brother before watching the movie, I had this idea that a lot of the stuff in this movie is going to be highly unnecessary. There's going to be conversations that should be had between two intelligent black men that are not going to be had, and it's just going to be two black men fighting, because that's, again, a pattern of white supremacy. Make those niggas fight. There was the same pattern in Black Panther. It's going to always be the same pattern. Black men are not intelligent enough to communicate. That's why Michael B. Jordan talking to Tessa Thompson, I don't know how to express my feelings. You're not expressing your feelings, brother. You're expressing your thoughts. But when you put it into the box of feelings, then that makes it like, okay, I don't want to talk about my feelings. No, brother, you're just expressing your thinking. Your thinking is what you're expressing. You're not expressing your feelings. Your feelings may be tied to your thinking, but you're just expressing your innermost thoughts. Tessa Thompson rebuking him like he a child. I don't know why you acting like this. Then brother wasn't even acting like nothing. He was just reasonably upset at certain things that was happening in the movie. But that's Tessa Thompson's role. She is a herder for Michael B. Jordan. She is his shepherd that guides him into what is right. Hey, I'm going to guide you into the right way to behave, because that, again, is the role that white people have assigned black women. White people have assigned the black woman the role of being the maintainer of men. You keep those nigga men in line, bitch. That's how white people talk. That's, you know, that's how white men talk. The first person who ever called a black woman a bitch was a white man. That was a very common, that's how that phrase became so common. Now, the first person who was ever called a bitch was a white woman, you know, but the language, you know, spread and spilled over to the black woman when the black woman became a part of the white man's property. So then he went from calling the white woman a bitch, you bitch, you know, speaking in that old English accent, bitch. And then he, you know, then passed the phrase over onto the black woman. So that's her role. Her role is to be, hey, keep those niggers in line. Make sure they stay correct. So she was getting upset with him for things that she shouldn't be upset with him about. He really, if this was a real movie, and it's not, it's a B-rated movie. And when the movie is a B-rated movie, it really is like a C-rated movie, truthfully. But there's a lot of greatness and a lot of potential to be an A-list movie, but it just doesn't make that cut, so it remains a B-list movie. But truthfully, it's a C-list movie because there's so many things that's working against it. In real life, Michael B. Jordan should have been like, yo, why the fuck does it seem like every time I have a problem, you got a problem with the fact that I have a problem? You don't know how to communicate. You don't know. She's talking to him about his inability to communicate. But that was also an opportunity for her character to learn how to communicate with him. I mean, for God's sake, she learned how to use sign language to communicate with her daughter who is deaf. She couldn't also learn how to communicate with a man who is dealing with emotional deafness. So it's a oversight of her character. Her character is not written well because it's not supposed to be written well. Her character is supposed to be a bitch who tells niggas what to do. Okay, whatever. Moving on. There was this light-skinned supremacy aspect where at the end of the movie, you know, Michael B. Jordan, he wins the fight. He goes into the locker room. They have their little, you know, they finally have their conversation that they were supposed to have at first. They finally have it at the end of the movie. You know, you was always my little bro and man, all that shit. You should have said, that was stuff that should have been said at the beginning of the movie. But I understand, you know, why they had it the way that they had it. Cool, whatever. So Damian says to Michael B. Jordan, hey man, you don't gotta sit around here talking to me. You know, go with your family, man. They waiting for you. Michael B. Jordan is like, yeah, you're right. He gets up. And this was the moment, the opportunity for him to put a permanent positive effect on his brother for all the damage that they had done to each other. This was the perfect opportunity for him to put a permanent positive effect on the two of their relationship. He should have said, this is what should have happened. And I was testing it in my mind. If you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And I'm just waiting because, you know, they doing all these dramatic pauses. So I'm like, okay, I'm waiting. What he was supposed to say was, brother, brother, you my family too. Come on. Come with me. Celebrate with me. Be with me. This light-skinned nigga gets up and says, hey man, you know where to find me if you ever need anything. Motherfucker, that's the same exact thing that you said at the beginning of the movie that the brother said he didn't like. He didn't want no handout from you. All he wanted to do was to be with you. So the movie was, but that's what I'm saying. You know, it's the light-skinned supremacy. So at the end of the movie, the light-skinned people get to hang around each other. But the dark-skinned black man, he's still in the dark room off to the side by himself. That's how the movie ends. So he goes from being by himself. There's no character arc in that. Where's the redemption for the black man? Hollywood ain't interested in redeeming no black man. That's why I'm saying every character was poised against this black man. Hey man, leave this nigga alone. Felicia Rashad, her character. I always wanted you to leave that little nigga child alone because he was nothing but bad news. That's not the truth about black men. Black men ain't nothing but bad news. You gotta look to the core of what a black man is. He ain't nothing but bad news, but that is the consensus. When you can't deal, when you're a problem, nigga, you have to be done away with. There's just some niggas who ain't no good. That's not true. But that is the common consensus in the nigga community and in the white community. The nigga community, the Negro nigga community is an offshoot of the white supremacist community. They don't think like black people. So, you know, they look at this dark-skinned black man. They say, oh, you ain't nothing but trouble. I'ma hide the letters that you were sending to my son. Why? He was defending your son. But the movie overlooked that so much. He had a gun. Yeah, he had a gun. So big fucking deal. Who cares? He shouldn't even have been in jail for 18 years off of just possession of a gun and not even firing it. He wasn't even supposed to be in jail for that long. But okay, that's how y'all wrote the movie, whatever. So, yeah, he had a gun and he came to the defense of your son. So you're going to hide the brother's letters from your son? I don't get it. But it's just that elite middle class or upper class Negro mentality. Hey, there's some niggas out there who's just bad news. So that's what the movie was basically about. And that's why it's just a B movie. It's really like a B minus. It's like a, it's like an 80. It's just on the brink of being like a C. Or, you know, and if it's a B movie, it's really a C movie. And therefore, if it's on the brink of being a C, then it's really at risk of being like a D. It's really at risk of being like a D movie. But it was just so thoroughly entertaining. even though the pacing was too quick, things happened too quickly. They're just trying to rush through things. Bop, 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 bop. You get out of jail. You show you have a temper. We show that Felicia Rashad has been having strokes. Dot, dot, dot. You have a fight. Dot, dot, dot. You win the fight. Dot, dot, dot. You become aggressive, dot, dot, dot. Mom dies, dot, dot, dot. We fight, the end. That's what I mean when I say movies back in the 70s and 90s and 80s, the way that they were shot was so adventurous that you really would get lost in the movie. If you watch like RoboCop or The Last Dragon or the, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie was not so focused on getting to the end of the movie. So you felt like you were really experiencing these characters and really, you know, understanding them and, you know, having fun with these characters. But today, movies are all about getting to the end. Finish this movie. Get to the end of the movie. That's what movies are all about these days. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was a good movie, man. I had a good time. I had a good time. But I just want to point those things out because too often, you know, we get so caught up in entertainment that we really aren't looking for the lessons and the morals inside of a story. You know, we're not really looking for morals and lessons anymore. We just want to be entertained and, stars are out. It's a full moon. I'm trying to think. Anything else recent? A lot going on in the world. A lot going on in the world. I have to have another follow-up to this. I want to convert my podcast to video form and then put them on YouTube. I was having some issues with that, but I'm going to get on top of those issues and fix them so that I can, you know, finally make that transition, and we'll have a much better, much more enjoyable experience. But okay, until the next time I get on this thing, you all be easy, and yeah, go watch the movie. It was a good movie. Try not to, you know, do what I did, think too much about it, so you can have a good time. I said all I gotta say on it. And don't be watching the movie thinking about what I've been saying to you. You know. But just see what I'm talking about. Go and see what I'm talking about. Okay, peace. Hey. Everything's okay? Greetings and welcome to the Conscious Observer podcast. There's a couple of things I want to talk about. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world today. And, you know, I just hope that everybody is staying safe, and it's very important to make your way to God in these last days. It's a difficult subject. It's difficult to keep a relationship with God. It's keep a relationship with the best version of yourself, or a version of yourself that, you know, is always on the horizon that you're reaching for. But it would be best for us to keep, try to keep a connection with that self, because we're getting in dark times. We're getting into some dark times. And no one knows when it's, you know, not many people know when it's going to get better. which is the reason why it feels cheap in a way to talk about movies and stuff like that. But I'm going to do it just so that, you know, I can expound on, you know, these things that we watch, that we all collectively see. You know, that's why I like to do it. If we all collectively are looking at the same thing and we're not always plumbing the depths of what this thing in front of us is, then I would like to cast my voice out to be a person who is talking about what could be at the bottom of this thing, because I don't always see a lot of people that are doing that. So to begin with, I made an episode excuse me, pardon me. It was the last episode that I just aired, and the episode might have been a little confusing for people who watch the channel, because the episode title was about Kang and Kang not being better than Thanos as a villain in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But the actual video clip itself, the actual audio, is me talking about Creed 3. Pardon me. And I just want to, you know, get that mix up taken care of. So, like, since I already talked about Creed 3, I might as well talk about what I was originally going to speak on, which is Kang being in the MCU, played by Jonathan Majors, a fantastic actor. You know, he was the center of a little bit of spectacle recently because he was on the cover of Ebony magazine, and he was very flowery and effeminate and very gay looking on the cover. And a lot of people have a problem with that, including myself. I have a problem with the demasculation of men, of black men. Well, people say, well, you know, it's not just black men, it's a growing fad. White men can afford to be gay if they want to. If white men want to be gay and white men want to have anal sex and white men want to do those things, they can afford to do so. They can't really afford to do so, because if a war breaks out in this country and they need people to go and fight, you know, you're not going to ask people with blue hair and green hair and red hair to fight, because they don't really have that type of mindset. It's not that they're pacifists. It's not that they're nonviolent. It's just that they're weak. And they don't really have they're beyond the hatred they have for themselves and for other humans. They don't really have the right strength that it takes to fight. If the white man wants to be gay, then let him be gay. But black people cannot afford to be gay, because we are already so far behind in so many things. The white man is exercising the peak of his civilization, because the white man's civilization peaked. It peaked in like the 80s or the 70s, probably like the 80s. The white civilization peaked. It can get no higher than that. Right now, what we're doing is we're experiencing a downward, the other side of the peak. The white man went up a peak. He, you know, plateaued, which means that, you know, he reached the zenith, so to speak. And now we're going back on the other side of that, going downward into like this technological age where people think that it's a progression towards all these different things. And there is a lot that came out of that was good. But in terms of humanity, it was for the worse. So the white man is expressing all of these different symptoms of being at the end of his rulership. He has ran out of ideas. He does not know what to do. So he is openly gay now. And that's fine if he wants to do that, but that's not good for us. And so I have an issue with those type of things. And so Jonathan Majors, he's playing King. Now, this is boring, but they're never going to let King be bigger than Thanos. Marvel is taking a feminine touch, feminine approach. And like I said on a episode that I did more recently, what we're seeing now in white society and in pop culture, because pop culture is an extension, a direct extension of white society, even though pop culture has a multicultural aspect to it where it's contributed by many different races and many different ethnic groups, it is still largely controlled, distributed, and ran by Caucasians. So it is an extension of white society. I said that to say that Kang is never going to be bigger than Thanos. But I was on the track of something. I was on the track of something, and I lost my thought. I'm sorry. I lost my thought like that. That's crazy. Lost my train of thought. But, you know, okay, let's try to connect it together again. The society that we live in, or pop culture, it is a white apparatus. So right now they're entering into their feminine phase of their satanic rule. That is what I was going into. The satanic rule of white supremacy has always been largely done by the forcefulness aspect, the forcefulness, the forcing, the dragging to hell. Being drugged to hell is the act of a force that is either compelling. Well, if it compels you, then, you know, it's like, you know, influence. But I'm actually talking about a visceral force that is actually pulling and taking people to hell, or, you know, the destruction of different races and different civilizations across the planet at the hands of white supremacy. That was the masculine form of white supremacy, or the masculine form of Satan. Because I am not making a distinction between white supremacy and Satan. In fact, what I'm doing is properly interpreting the Bible. When the Bible talks about white supremacy, when the Bible talks about Satan, it is talking about, it speaks of this entity who is considered to be one entity, the same way that God is considered to be one entity. The reason why God considers himself to be one is because God truly is one. He is the one. But when God sometimes speaks He doesn't always refer to just himself. Sometimes he includes the efforts of other people or the angels that are around him or the other gods in his midst that are in his midst, but under his leadership. So they cannot call themselves the supreme being. He calls himself the supreme being. But sometimes he refers to all of them together collectively as we created man and we did this and we did that. Not because he needs help, but because he assigns different roles to other people, because he respects the godhood of other people. He encourages other entities to become gods. And if other people do reach the status of being a god, then they have earned the right to be in his fold. And if they've earned the right to be in his fold, then he puts them to use. It's not that he needs them, but he puts other people to use because you still have work. There's still work to do even in heaven. You know, there's still work to do in heaven. And I don't believe in heaven and hell in terms of spirit realms that you go when you die. But I'll get into that a little bit later. God considers himself one, and Satan considers himself one. And Satan is written about as being one individual. But Satan is the collective consciousness and the collective efforts of a group of people. What group of people? I don't know. You tell me. But what I'm saying is that what we're seeing is the feminine version of white supremacy take effect, where now everything is going to be female superheroes, and you know, Ant-Man's daughter is going to be the new Ant-Man, and there's going to be a female Thor. There was a female Thor. There's a female Iron Man played by a black girl. There's going to be the female Black Panther, the female Hulk, She-Hulk, the female this, the female that. So they brought in a black man in the midst of all this feminine energy to show that the weakness of the black man is that he's not strong enough to be a villain that goes against intelligent, strong, masculine men. No, he's a weakling. So here, the most that he gets to go up against is Ant-Man, who everyone regards as a joke, because Ant-Man in the MCU is a second or even third tier. Ant-Man truly is like a third tier hero in the MCU. The first tier would be like Thor, Hulk. I think Iron Man is like second tier, but sometimes Iron Man, because of his abilities, is first tier. So Iron Man is even first tier. Second tier is like Spider-Man. You know what I'm saying? Spider-Man is second tier. Who else is on that same? Captain America, because Captain America is not first tier. People want to think Captain America because of his title and his leadership qualities that he's first tier. It doesn't pardon me. It doesn't make him first tier. Now, in the comic books, he's presented as that, but I am taking a real world aspect, a real world look at Captain America. When you really evaluate Captain America, he can be beaten by Iron Man. He can be beaten by Thor. He could be beat. You ain't never see Captain America fight the Hulk, because it's not going to work. Thor can fight the Hulk. Iron Man has fought the Hulk. But Captain America can't. And the Hulk is the strongest. Actually, it's kind of tied between Thor and the Hulk. But you understand what I'm saying. Even the, you know, less liked Miss Marvel, she's a first rate. Even based off of how they have her positioned in the MCU, she's actually S tier. Meaning that she's actually above all the other men in terms of her power and, you know, her abilities, whatever. Third tier, we're talking Falcon, We're talking Hawkman, Hawkeye, and we're talking Ant-Man. Now, see, Ant-Man is the leader of third tier. He's the leader of the third tier, but he's still third tier. He can still be defeated. Now, he has things that he can do that make him very formidable. Like, very formidable. Like, if he had killer instincts, he could really mess somebody up pretty badly. But since he doesn't, then, you know, what he is and what he does doesn't really matter. He's third tier. So they have Kang, a black man, the Thanos replacement, allegedly. But see, this is what I want to talk about with white supremacy. You see how I talk? You hear the lack of pandering in my voice. I care what you think, but I don't care that you don't like what I say. I care what you think, though. I am trying to help bring a different perspective to you so that you can analyze and weigh out truthfulness versus people who are outright lying to you or people who are just withholding a lot of information to keep themselves from being persecuted or this, that, and the third. I don't talk that way. And you should make note of that if you haven't already. So when I speak, I would like it if you didn't consider me to be a nut or consider me to be someone who is, you know, lacking in intelligence. I would like you to consider what I say when I say these things and you know, maybe even, you know, humor me a little bit and even grant me the thought, the benefit of doubt that I know a little bit of what I'm talking about. So when I say that I understand white psychology, you have to, well, you don't have to do anything, but you should trust me. I understand white psychology. I understand how white writers are. I understand the handicaps and the weaknesses and strengths that white writers see. A lot of people that do reviews of movies and stuff, the intelligence factor in their reviews is not always up to par because they seem to watch movies with the idea that the actors are in control of what they do in the movies. And that's ridiculous. People sometimes watch movies and say, I don't know why Jonathan Majors did that in the film. And it's like because there was a script that told him to do that. So you don't focus your attention on the actor. You always focus your attention on the writer. Sometimes you focus it on the director, but you really shouldn't even focus it on the director because the director also is another paid element who is working on the behalf of the producer. So the director isn't even a person who's always calling the shots. Not when it comes to the real messages and the real intent and purpose of a film. So white supremacy doesn't do things on accident. It's not, you know, coincidence that they hired a black man to play Kang. That was very calculated. They want to humiliate Jonathan Majors. They want to humiliate him. They want to humiliate black people because white people have to have a person underneath of them or else their empire will collapse. So Jonathan Majors is to act as the representative of all black people. They are going to make it seem like they care about having a villain, a black villain, or we want to give black people representation. No, you don't. You want to make a villain who is black so that you can make heroes who are white defeat him, namely heroes who are weak, namely women. That's why it's not a coincidence that when Jonathan Majors first appeared in Loki, he was killed by the female Loki. And the way that they acted, if you look at that scene, the only person who was really acting in that scene was Jonathan Majors. And the two Lokis, the way that they were acting, I want you to understand what I'm about to say. You have to understand white people when they're being fake. Now, actors are fake, right? They're faking, but just because an actor is pretending or acting within, you know, a hypothetical situation or an unreal situation doesn't mean that they're faking. They could be sincerely, really in tune with their character. But if you look at that scene with the two Lokis and how they're approaching Jonathan Majors, it's like they have forgotten how powerful they are so that they can accommodate for the alleged power of Jonathan Majors' character. It's very weird. If you pay attention to how they're acting, and it doesn't take much, it's not subtle, it's just weird. You know, you're looking at these Lokis, you know Loki, and you followed his story, so you know that he has power. He's Thor's brother. He's very capable as a supervillain. But now all of a sudden he's, you know, uneasy with this black man. And the reason why is because the writers wrote them to be extra uneasy around Kang. Now why? It is because white people are going to extra lengths to pretend that they are not the god of this world. White people are going to extra lengths to pretend that they do not control this world. White people don't want you to call them sir. And very few black people are intelligent or privy. No, very few black people are understanding. All black people are intelligent. Please don't mistake my words. But what I'm trying to say is that very few black people are knowing to why white people say that. See, you have to understand white psychology. Why do white people not want you to call them sir? The reason is because they are collectively trying to withdraw their presence as being the masters of the world that we live in. They are trying to blend into the shadows and make it so that they're just another human, and they want to be unassuming when it comes to who's in charge. They always want, they're playing a game of charades. So when you see the Lokis, they're approaching Jonathan Majors, they're like, they're scared of him, like extra scared of him, even though he's acting like a joke. And then despite him being a jokey Negro, the white woman still kills him. The white Loki kills Jonathan Majors. She's not, you know, his seemingly innocence, because he is, I mean, he's presenting himself as an innocent character who's only acting out of his need to control this bigger situation, which is very easy to understand. He puts it in a way that's very easy to understand. But the white writers have wrote her character to be adamantly antagonistic towards his character, because the white woman has to earn her stripes as a satanic force by destroying the black man. Let me say that again. Because you see all these Karens and you don't quite understand what you're saying. The white woman has to earn her stripes as being a part of satanic rulership and domination by buck breaking the black man, by killing the black man. So a lot of times black men have run-ins with white women at their job. I know I do. I have run-ins with white women where white women are trying to subdue me as a man on my job. And that is because everyone gets their confidence boost by going against black men. I'm going to say that again. Everyone, black men included, black women included, white men and white women get a huge confidence boost by going against black men. It's like fighting a lion. Every black man you see is a lion or a soon to be a lion or a person that has the potentiality to be a lion. And so if you castrate a lion, you get to hang his balls around your neck. You understand? You wear his balls as a trophy. And that is what the black man is up against. The black man is up against a world full of people who have scissors that say black man's balls on them. That was kind of stupid. Not gonna lie. But you understand the metaphor. We live in a world full of people who are out to castrate blackness and black men. So the movies are all about demonstrating the method by which you do the castration. That's all movies are for white people. Black people watch movies to be entertained. White people watch movies to be educated on how they should proceed in their role as a white person in the future. Let me say it again. Black people make the mistake of watching movies to be entertained, which is very goofy of us. Oh yeah, it was a good movie. What was the message about? Message? There was no message in that movie. If there was no message in the movie, then it really wasn't anything that should have been watched, really. Nah, man, you think too much. White people watch movies to be educated on how they should proceed into the next steps of their domination. So when you watch Loki and you watch the female Loki kill Jonathan Majors, that was the white woman's induction into being the new ruler. In fact, I mean, that's actually what he said to her in the damn show. He said, "You have to take my place. Whoever kills me has to take my place." So this was the white woman killing the black man to receive his power in a, you know, interpretation of that scene. But it goes over into real life. The white woman is now being prompted and also promoted as the new Satan. And when I say Satan, all I mean is the evil ruler of the white world. The white man is taking a back seat and he's allowing his queen to make all the chess moves, even though, of course, he's controlling her. When you play chess, very often it's the queens that are doing all the moving. But right now, the white man has a slight advantage because on top of being able to control his white queen, he is also able to control black queens as well. So the white man has a black queen on his army and he has a white queen too. So he's kind of balling a little bit. But that's okay because Allah's still going to kill him. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that he has our women and his women and he has the gays and he has the nuclear weapons and he has the COVID and he has all the drug, the fentanyl, and he has all the drugs, and he has all the biological weapons, and the CDC is inventing new diseases to unleash onto the public. It doesn't matter that the white man has all those things because he's still going to be destroyed. Doesn't matter. So, but what we're looking at is the female Satan's rise into power. And that is the reason why you're going to see the onslaught, the over exhaustion of white female rulership in media and everything else, with the black woman at her side as like her dog. That's what you saw in the Scarlet Witch show. What was it called? WandaVision? Yeah, WandaVision. You know, the black lady was her sidekick in the show, acting like her mammy and saying stupid mammy things. You know how mammies talk. You know how white writers make black women talk. White writers are not good conductors of black bodies. So when white writers get the opportunity to pen the voice and the language of a black woman, he always makes her into a coon and a mammy. I mean, almost without fail, he almost always will do that. They will always make us sound completely stupid. And that is the reason why Kang is never going to be bigger than Thanos, because white people cannot afford black people to think that they can ever be better than white people. So Kang is a joke for white people, and he's a joke to the writers. The writers are always going to write him as a joke. They're going to make him say things that are going to make it seem as though he's an idiot. Like when he says that line in the movie, he says to Ant-Man, "Oh, you're an Avenger. Does that mean that I've killed you before? Are you the one with the hammer?" And he says, "No, that's Thor." Huh. Which is to say that he killed Thor. But at the end of the Ant-Man 3, he gets killed by Ant-Man. Actually, he gets killed by the Wasp. He gets killed by the white female again. So he's getting killed. So this is the second time he's been killed by a white female, and it's not a coincidence. But he's also the same person who is boasting that he killed Thor, who, like I mentioned before, is a first tier or class A ranked hero in the Marvel Universe. So white writers are making him to say things that later on will prove to be they want him to make himself appear to be stronger than he is so that he can be defeated easily. See, when Thanos says that he was strong, the strongest at this, that, and the third, it actually carried weight because he really was. But they want Jonathan Majors to be the Negro child, because that's how they see black people. They see black people as people who are always boasting about how much we have and how manly and strong we are. But white people always laugh at us when we're walking around wearing chains and diamonds. Why do white people always laugh at the black man with the diamonds and the chains? Because he understands psychology, and he understands that anybody who has to boast is doing so from a position of innate inferiority complexes. There's inferiority complexes due to a lack of knowledge. When you see the brothers who are wearing the chains, you almost without fail, they're brothers who are not, you know, the most educated men. They're not the most educated. They made their claim to fortune and fame by being rappers. They're not very educated. And so to compensate, to overcompensate for their lack of education, for their lack of skill in real world, I mean, they can only be skilled in a booth. White people laugh at that. They can only be skilled. Not that they can only be, but they have not, and not that they have, but it's white supremacy that has been so stunting to the growth of black people that black people now believe that the only thing that we can do, man, is only thing I can do is be a rapper. And the white man laughs at that. So the same way the white man laughs at that in real life is the same way that they are writing King to be laughed at. In fact, they probably even made King black so that white people could walk around talking about we was Kings. Because that's something that you're going to see in the comment section under every King video, is white people saying we was Kings, because white people find it very funny that black people used to be people of high-minded civilization and are now being reduced to low and subhuman levels of existence. White people find that funny. And that just also goes to show you that white people are not your friend. White people are not our friends. They find our position in this world that they put us in to be funny, which means that they really have no intentions on helping you. Anybody who has intentions on helping you does not laugh at your circumstances. But the reason why they laugh at the circumstances is because they don't have the wherewithal to be good. And they also know they put us in the circumstances in the first place. So because, well, I put you there, but just because I put you there don't mean I'm going to get you out. So I might as well laugh at you. I put you in a hole, but I'm not getting you out. So I'm going to laugh at you. And then when you're in the hole, you start acting strange, trying to make yourself seem more important than what you are. So you have to understand, and white people who listen to this, they understand. Don't think that when you listen to me talk that you're listening to some type of psychopath, because white people understand nuances in film and in cinema and in writing. They understand it very, very well. You have to read some of the essays that white people write to show you how well they understand the nuances of acting and the nuances of writing and the nuances of how the actor interprets the writer's language. So don't think, oh, this Negro is out of his mind. No, I'm not. You all just have to be a little bit more studious than what we're being. Have to be just a little bit more studious than what we're being. So yeah, Kang is, he's never gonna be bigger than Thanos. It's just a joke. They wanna make him into the center of jokes. To be laughed at and ridiculed and mocked and defeated. So they make the black man a villain, not to win. He ain't gonna beat Thanos, so he ain't gonna win. He is there to be defeated. He is there purposefully to be defeated. Also, Chris Rock stand up. Now, in order to really take offense to anything that Chris Rock said in his stand up, you have to first believe that Chris Rock actually slapped Will Smith, which I don't believe. So it's very idiotic to me to walk around seeing people saying, ooh, did you hear what Chris Rock said about Will Smith and Jada? Yeah, I did. And what it is it's a continuation of a lie. You have to, when you lie, you better, if you lie, the upkeep of that lie requires a lot of maintenance. And that's the reason why the white man puts so much stock into making sure that black people never understand the truth, because the truth can easily defeat a lie. This whole world is based on the foundation of lies. The only truth in it is the mathematics of the world that we live in. But truthfully, if it wasn't for the effort of some other part of an equation doing the work to get to the side, to get to the point where white people can even experience the majesty of mathematics, they would never know what it feels like to be in this type of civilization. They needed black people in order to realize their dreams. They needed us. We are the conduit of white dreams. White dreams flow through black bodies. Sometimes I'll be saying stuff in here that should be put into a book. But anyway, you have to believe that Chris Rock actually slapped Will Smith in order to get hype. But the way that I see it is just a continuation of a lie. They lied. Who lied? Will Smith, Chris Rock, and the Academy. The Oscars lied. The Oscars need viewers. No one watches the Oscars because the energy of white supremacy is losing its fervor. No one cares about white supremacy anymore. That is one of the signs of its decline. Black people, even though black people are slaves to white supremacy, the average black person that you meet is a slave of white supremacy. That doesn't necessarily matter, because even being a slave to white supremacy, black people are still powerful and more powerful in our unity than white supremacy. So even though black people are slave-minded and oppressed by white supremacy, the attention and the interests of the world are always focused and, you know, based around black people's interests. Whatever black people are interested in is where the world will go. So it doesn't matter that black people are subjected and dehumanized and oppressed by white supremacy. If black people just start to put their interest in things that, and it's really not, it really wasn't deliberate. It really was just accidental. Black people just stopped finding a reason to, and because we stopped finding a reason to, everybody else is like, hey, this shit is boring. Now the white people don't want to watch it. Now white people don't want to watch the Academy Awards because it's like, so they needed a reason. They needed something, and they used two black people to do it, because it served so many purposes. The first and most important purpose is to keep black people divided. Some black people are rooting for Chris Rock. Some black people are rooting for Will Smith. Some black people are rooting for Jada Pinkett Smith. You see what I'm saying? They needed something to, one, keep black people divided. Two, make people watch the Oscars. Three, to set a precedent of black people being uncontrollable and uncivilized, and therefore not qualified to receive awards. And that's why at the Oscars now, they're making Will Smith's slap from last year a big deal. And they probably, they're trying to make it have, like, you know, an effect on how they do their selection process in the future and all that kind of stuff. But all of this was just a plan. So you got people, ooh, did you hear what Chris Rock said? Yeah, Chris Rock is a clown. And he took many months to come up with the perfect, you know, explanation and the perfect delivery to announce to the world how he felt about Will Smith. Did you sue Will Smith? No, I ain't gonna sue him. Why are you not going to sue him? Because I was in on it. I'd have to sue myself. I'd have to sue myself as well. So on top of that, I mean, the brother's stand up was very just slavish. It was disgusting the way that he was talking about black men and the way he was saying stuff like, yeah, the Kardashians love black people more than black people. And when people say that, what they're talking about is acceptance. What they're talking about is that white people accept black people, no matter how they are, more than black people do. And that's because black people hold each other up to a higher standard out of love, and white people deliberately hold black people to a lower standard out of hate. So you find white people being accepted. Oh, I love that you're gay. Yeah, she and he love that you're gay because that was the whole process of why they beat slaves. They didn't beat slaves to be strong. They beat slaves to be weak. They beat slaves to get to a point where they didn't have to beat them, where the slave would get into the rhythm of beating himself or herself. And that is what you see with the black homosexual community and the black feminist community. They are communities of people who beat themselves for the pleasure of white people. They beat themselves. The black homosexual community fights the black heterosexual community, even though it's the black heterosexual community that they came out of. Everyone came out of the black heterosexual community. The black feminists beat up the black man. The black feminists even beat up other black women, because just feminism erroneously is believed to be about women loving women, but that's actually false. Women cannot truly ever love women without the agency of men. That may not make sense to some people, but I don't really have the time to break down what that means. Just understand what I'm trying to say. Without the agency of men, women can never truly love other women. There needs to be a buffer between women. It can't be contact, direct contact with women. They need something in between them, so that they can communicate through that thing that's in between them. That thing can be an idea. It can be a shared, it can be the idea of submission to the same agenda. That thing can be the authority, leadership, and direction and guidance of a man. But it can't just be them, because the woman is naturally chaotic. And, you know, she's unreasonable. That's just her nature. She's unreasonable. So white people accept black people. That does not mean that white people love black people. White people are going to extra lengths to pretend that they care for black people because they're actors. But they act with the purpose of maintaining the illusion. But people are becoming so aware of the illusion that at some point white people are going to stop acting and just go out and just start killing and really showing what they have inside. And that's what you see in the school systems when they talk about, when you see, look in the school systems and the way white teachers criminalize and, you know, do all kinds of evil, mischievous things to black children, and how they're trying to take history regarding black people's servitude. There are evil servitude and enslavement in this country. This is all, you know, the viciousness of white supremacy. And this is the viciousness of people who know that the end is near for their civilization and are becoming less diplomatic about the situation. They're just getting right back down to business, making America great again. So Chris Rock, his stand-up was very vulgar, overly vulgar, and unnecessarily vulgar, not needed. There's no need for his jokes. You know, the jokes that the, you know, a nigga this, you know, pussy, abortion. The things that the brother said about abortion were absolutely appalling, just straight up disgusting. Just straight up disgusting. There was nothing creative or nothing, you know, nothing witty or intelligent about his stand-up whatsoever. It was just completely a tap dance for white supremacy. That's all it was. It was just Chris Rock just tap dancing for white people so that he can say, see, I was a good nigga. I'll talk about black people and I'll talk about how I slapped Will Smith and I call his wife a bitch and all this type of stuff. All of that was for show. And Will Smith and Jada Pinkett already know and knew what he was going to say because they already talked about it. You don't think Will Smith and Chris Rock talked in this whole time, then you don't really understand what's going on here. Don't really, and I'm kind of getting tired of, you know, being the guy with the tinfoil hat on. I mean, we all saw the lack of a slap. Y'all think y'all saw a slap. I know you didn't see one because we all saw the same thing. You didn't see a slap. You saw a choreographed, well-rehearsed WWE match. That's what you saw. And so now you, oh God, did you hear what Chris Rock said about Will Smith? Oh my God. And this was all the white man's plan all along. Keep these stupid ass niggas divided. Keep these gullible-ass, non-intelligent-ass black people divided. We can look at something clear as day and still make a determination that it was real. You can look at something, see the fake, see the whole context of everything about it and still make the determination that, yeah, that was real. Come on, man. We got to get better than that. That was stupid. That was stupid on our part. So white people want to come and use that as the basis to say, well, these niggas have finally proved that they're stupid enough to be slaughtered. Then, you know, you'll know why. If white people make that determination overnight, then you'll know why. It's probably because you believe that Will Smith slapped Chris Rock when nothing tells you that he did. There ain't no evidence that he slapped that man, aside from these idiots coming out here talking about, oh, Will Smith talking about I apologize and all this type of shit, and then white people make him come out with a movie called Emancipation, which is basically a movie about Will Smith's real life predicament. Will Smith and Chris Rock in real life are both slaves. So white people like to do stuff like that where they make movies that are like hints at what the person who's the actor in the movie, what they're really going through in real life and all that type of stuff. You think that the movie was like, sometimes movies are made specifically for that reason. And I believe that movie was one of them. Will Smith trying to escape slavery. Yeah, Will Smith is a real life slave to Hollywood. They did that because they were forced to do that. Shit, you better know. You better act like you know. You better act like you know what's going on here. Oh boy. Oh boy. Tired. Man, I gotta get some sleep. Yeah, between the Chris Rock and Iron Man, Ant-Man, Chris Rock, Ant-Man, MCU failing, oh man. Yeah, it's going down. It's going down. Snowing in California, it's going down. I just hope y'all prepared. You know, make sure you stock up on food when you go to the grocery store and you buy your food. Get four cans of canned food, canned vegetables, canned food every time you go to the grocery store. Every time you go to the grocery store. So that over time you'll build up a collection of canned food to have in your house in the case of emergency, where you're not allowed by some sort of, you know, weather condition, you're not allowed to leave your house. So you should have food stocked up in your house in those situations to keep yourself alive, because it's going down. Satan couldn't last forever. You had a good run, Satan. You couldn't last forever. It just can't last forever. You can't torment and kill and you make people gay and, you know, make little children turn transgender. You know, Satan, you just couldn't do it forever, you know? And I thank God that you can't do it forever. I love the fact that Allah is going to put a stop to all of our madness. All of our evil will be done away with. And I love it. I love it. This world deserves to be a righteous world. This planet is so beautiful. Everything about this planet is so beautiful. The only thing on this planet that ain't beautiful is the human beings. And I don't believe that Allah is going to kill all human beings. But there's going to be a lot less people after he's done with this, with his determination of who should stay on the planet after judgment. After being judged, we're going to be judged. And he'll make his determination on, wow, he's going to make his determination on who can stay on the planet. That being said, I have to go pray. Thank you for listening. And I hope that you all have a good rest of your week. And, you know, be observant and watch out for your surroundings. Peace.